We're talking with Paul Watson, who is the director of Sea Shepherd. Paul, first of all, let's give a little history on Sea Shepherd and you.
Well, I set the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society up in 1977 after leaving Greenpeace. I was one of the co-founders of the Greenpeace Foundation. And I set Sea Shepherd up as an organization to concentrate on upholding international conservation law and marine wildlife and habitats. So that's what we've been doing for almost 30 years now.
And, of course, there's a tremendous history which people can learn by going to seashepherd.org and learning about the ongoing work you're preparing to launch again to protect seals and whales. I applaud you for that.
Yeah, we're also involved with everything from invertebrates up to the great whales. You know, we're working in partnership with the Galapagos National Park. We provide a vessel there to assist in anti-poaching efforts, and we have an agreement with the government of Colombia to protect Mapello Island National Park. And we're now finding we're getting invited by other countries. For instance, I met in January with the president of Senegal, who wants Sea Shepherd to work with them to stop poaching in their waters.
Today I'd like to have you give your thoughts on a debate that's raging in the environmental community that was posed by Michael Schellenberger and Ted Nordhaus of, at least the Apollo Alliance. The question being, is environmentalism dead? What are your thoughts?
Well, I found it a bit arrogant for Schellenberger and Nordhaus to, based on interviews with 25 people from large so-called environmental organizations, to come to the conclusion that environmentalism is dead. In fact, it's far from dead. I mean, as someone who has been involved with the environmental movement right from its modern beginnings in the 1960s until now, I've seen it as a steady, ongoing, and more influential movement, certainly stronger now than it really ever has been. So I certainly disagree with what they're saying.
What do you think was the nature of their statement, is environmentalism dead? Is it a problem with definition?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is to have people getting more involved with social justice issues and the politics of the Democratic Party, really. And they're saying that we should focus on labor issues, left-winged issues, that sort of thing, and not even use the word environment. I just really don't understand that at all. I mean, there is a social justice movement, and it's fine, but, there is also an environmental movement. And there's been this attempt, and it's certainly been echoed in the pages of the Earth First Journal and Sierra Club and Earth Island, everywhere. There's this attempt to take over the environmental movement by the social justice movement. And, it used to be with Earth First, it was Earth First, but now it's sort of like, gay rights, human rights, women's rights first and Earth second, that sort of thing. You know, I'm more of an international conservationist. I work on the international level, so I'm involved with numerous countries and working worldwide. And so, therefore, I find this whole Nordhaus-Schellenberger thing really an American approach to it. It's really not taking into account the movement globally.
Let's talk about the global movement then, because that's a very interesting perspective, and it broadens the debate enormously. What do you see happening in terms of the environmental movement to save nature and the Earth?
Well, I think there is a global movement, and it's a decentralized movement, but based on more and more people becoming aware of what the problems are. And I'm especially excited to see developments in third world nations where, individuals and organizations are coming together and protecting everything from rainforests to local ecosystems, trying to, protect water sources, make sure there's clean air. I mean, this is a new kind of thinking in many third world nations. And, now we're even seeing the Nobel Prize being given to people in Africa for their environmental work, which is something that was really unthinkable in the 70s. Nobody was really involved in that kind of thing. So this is why I say that this movement is growing, and more and more people are becoming involved, because I see the strength of this in its diversity. You know, I'm really don't have much faith in large environmental organizations. I think that what we need are hundreds of thousands of small organizations and individuals working on hundreds of thousands of different issues and all going towards the same objective.
Their main focus is inspired by what they claim to be a failure for the U.S. environmental movement to address climate change and global warming. What about climate change and global warming on a global scale and its relationship to the environmental movement? That's kind of where they were suggesting the failure was occurring.
Well, the United States is a, you know, pretty backward when it comes to environmental issues, and has become increasingly so since the 92 conference and the UN conference in Brazil on the environment. You know, they refused to sign the biodiversity treaty that year, and now they're refusing to sign the Kyoto Protocol. So the U.S. is choosing to, you know, stay apart from the global concerns about the environment. And a lot of that has to do with the, you know, the reactionary course of politics in this country. And, you know, when you have half of your population believing, you know, in pie-in-the-sky fantasies, and the world is, only, you know, and a good part of those that believe the world is only 4,000 years old, you know, you have some serious problems. So we've actually got the incredible situation where the most powerful country in the world, certainly one of the most richest, is actually going back to the medieval times in their outlook on nature and reality.
Well, perhaps to help Schellenberger and Nordhaus and those who weigh in on that side, if it was your task to try to change this American perspective, what might you suggest?
Well, I don't know if it can be changed right now. The pendulum has to go all the way over. I think that Bush's extremism is going to result in some sort of reaction. For every action, there's a reaction. I think that's going to happen. I mean, he's going to push it so far, and then it's going to start pushing back.
You're on the ocean. What are you seeing in terms of the effect of climate change, global warming, from your perspective?
Well, what I'm seeing, the most serious problem in the world today is the diminishment of species. We're losing more species of plants and animals in such a short period of time. This has not really happened in the last 65 million years. But what we're also seeing is the impact of global warming on that. And, you know, this change in ocean currents, the melting of the polar ice caps, both south and north, these things are happening. I find it's absolutely incredible that people deny that there's global warming when the evidence is there. You know, and for the last 30 years, I've seen a steady diminishment of marine species. 90% of the large fish in the ocean have been exterminated. That's according to the Pew Foundation report and other reports, most recently one by British scientists. You know, the oceans are dying in our time, as Jacques Cousteau pointed out just before he died. But, you know, for the most part, the oceans are out of sight and out of mind. Nobody wants to really focus on them. You know, but there's really too many people and not enough fish is really what it comes down to.
Do you see systems that may be useful in turning that around?
Well, you know, I have a lot of faith in, you know, the laws of ecology. That's really what I live my life by, the three basic laws of ecology, the law of diversity, that strength lies in diversity, the law of interdependence, the species within ecosystems are interdependent upon each other, and the law of finite resources, that there's a limit to growth. And throughout natural history, any time a species has lived contrary to those laws of ecology, they've gone extinct, and the same will happen to us. I mean, we might take a lot of species with us, but we cannot live on this planet and not live in accordance with those basic ecological laws. I think the most important one being the law of finite resources. There's limits to growth. We've got to stabilize human populations because we're literally stealing the carrying capacity of other species in order to advance our own numbers.
As the world develops, and of course we have to embrace China as part of that, how are we going to deal with this? If we continue with a consumerist society, which of course is kind of a natural human desire to have good, neat stuff, what are we facing in the future? How would you suggest we might look at that?
Well, you know, Jared Diamond just published a book called Collapse, and I think that makes good reading for anybody to look at how civilizations have collapsed throughout history. And certainly the symptoms are there that this could happen to us. I mean, it's all smoke and mirrors right now. The United States is looked upon as the richest country in the world, but, you know, it's trillions of dollars in debt. It's not really, it's all just on paper. This is going to crash. I mean, if everything was based on gold, it would have crashed a long time ago. It's just all an illusion. There's simply not enough resources in the world to allow for, say, third world nations to develop and compete with and become equal with the Western worlds as they are right now. In fact, it's going to go the other way. Europe and the United States, the industrialized countries, are going to crash. They're going to become impoverished. So not only will third world countries not be able to become more materially wealthy, the materially wealthy countries are going to become poorer. Well, what we're seeing, you know, in the 21st century are the wars over resources, where the wars in the 20th century were primarily over territory. We're now involved in oil wars. But, you know, within the next decade or so, we're going to see the water wars. And that's where it's going to get real vicious. you know, with conflicts over the rights to control water resources. You know, I certainly envision a war between Canada and the United States because Canada's water rich and the U.S. is going to want it. So if they don't get it, they're going to take it, and it's as simple as that. And so there's going to be more and more conflicts over resources because of this law of finite resources. And so things, as for the environmental movement being dead, the environmental movement is stronger than has been and will become the most important movement in the history of the world. And so the environmental movement will grow considerably in the 21st century. So far from being dead, it's probably it's the only movement which has any hope for saving human society.
It is the future. We can't, eventually, it will no longer be off the radar screen. I was appalled that, for example, in this last presidential election, there was one question in all of the debates that related to the environment. I found that unbelievable. It totally out of sync with any sense of the reality on this planet. Things like that scare me.
Well, yeah, and also in the last election, you know, one of the reasons the Democrats lost, the Democrats won't stand up for anything. I mean, they're just mini Republicans, Republicrats, I call them. And so there's really not a lot to offer there. And so people are choosing now to live in a world of illusions. Not only do they believe that, you know, God's running the country, but, I mean, if you listen to the president's inaugural address, I mean, at one point he said, you know, from the founding of this nation, we have looked upon all people as being equal. Well, what happened for the first 100 years, as I recall, a good part of the population were in slavery. How could he possibly say that? You know, but they've convinced themselves that, you know, this fantasy democracy that they are preaching around the world has been the most perfect democracy ever developed, and it's always been that way. So we've turned democracy into a religion, and one where faith is more important than fact.
Do you see some sort of global effort at trying to unite this sort of the politics of the planet in an effective way? I think there's a total lack of leadership on the planet. That's one of, as you say, it's not only in the Democratic or the Republican Party, but it literally is around the globe.
The only leadership and the only dissent that's coming is really from the European nations, and I think that the European nations are actually poised to, you know, replace the United States as the most powerful you know, entity, a political entity on the planet, because not only are they, you know, progressing with what they have, of course they are doomed to collapse too, but they're doing so with a bit of a logic and rationale behind what they're doing, where in the United States the logic's gone out the window.
I know from my perspective, I live in California, we brag about the fact that we're the solar state and that we have 15,000 homes that are partially solar powered, and we think we've really accomplished something, but when you look to Japan, for example, that has 1 million homes, it puts this into perspective, and this is just a facade.
Oh, it is. I mean, 15,000 out of a population of over 30 million. I mean, it's incredible. you have to applaud those people who, of course, who are doing this, but they're such a minority.
Paul Watson, I want to thank you for giving your thoughts and voice to the Voice of the Earth on the Wildside News. Where are you off to now?
I'm on the national board of the Sierra Club, so I'm off to a Sierra Club meeting in Puerto Rico, of all places, and then back to the ship, and then up to protect seals off the east coast of Canada and to protect cod off of the Grand Banks of Newfoundland. That's where I'll be involved for the next 3 months.
Thank you so much. Let's continue this conversation again.
Thank you.